For the past 26 weeks, our host, Mark Gandy, has been interviewing some great authors and talking the big ideas from those books. This week, we're turning those tables on Mark, as we've learned he's read 60 books in the first half of 2021. What are they? What are his favorites? Wouldn't you like to know? By the way, I am a fan of the show, and I'm a reader myself. This is Schaefer Schutz. This is the CFO Bookshelf, and this is going to be fun.
I think you're hired. You are going to be the full-time host, Schaefer. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. It's cool to be. It's cool for you to let a fan jump on here and kind of be involved.
So do we? Before I know, I'm the one being interviewed, which is weird. Do we need to talk a little bit about you real quickly? Who are you? You're a recent MBA grad, and you're a big-time football player quarterback. Do we get to ask about that?
Yeah, I don't know what your definition is of that phrase. I don't know if it lines up with most people.
But well, you're in the same city as Patrick Mahomes.
That's not false. I am in the same city as a great quarterback, but went to school at Benedictine College. I did play football there. Had a ton of fun playing for Coach Wilcox, a legendary coach there, just retired this past year. I think he's top 10 all-time wins in all of college football.
By the way, was it your junior or senior year you played in the championship game in NAIA, right?
Correct. Yep. Our senior year, we went to the national championship. Fell a little short, but what an awesome experience and pretty cool to be a part of.
And you are a big time reader, right?
I am. Yep. I try to be as not quite 60 books, 61 books. What how many did you read?
Was it 60? It is as of today, I think it's 65 or 66, but as of June 30th, it was 60. And let me clarify, 31 of those books are books. So that would be Kindle or physical books. And then the other 29 have been audio books, and all of those are from Audible. So a split 31, 29, and then 60.
So you've read 5 books in 2 weeks. These last 2 weeks, you've read 5 books.
Yeah. And I've actually been slow just because one of the books I'm reading is like, it's Mind Over Matter by Ron Baker, who's been a former guest. And that book has taken me forever. I still have 2 more chapters to go, but the answer is yes. Sometimes I can get through a book a week.
How do you do that? I mean, that sounds pretty difficult. To me, at least, and I know I'm not the brightest individual on the planet.
But. Yeah, listen to you. I do know you a little bit on a personal level. I don't know if I agree with that, but well, first of all, I am older. I have a few years on you. I don't have young kids in our home, but I will usually at least get 1 hour of reading in. And don't forget, I mentioned listening. So I used to do a lot of driving. So driving time, I mean, sometimes you'd be round trip. I mean, that could be 2 hours a day just driving back and forth. You know, I live in a small town, Columbia, Missouri, but just to get from my house to Target, that's like 20 stupid minutes. But that's 20 minutes of listening one way. I try to walk every night, sometimes 1 hour to 1 hour and 15 minutes. My knees are shot, unfortunately, but hey, that's getting listening in. So that's almost a book every 9 to 10 days if it's a 8-9 hour book. And then just reading, again, I can generally read about an hour, 15 minutes per day. On the weekends, I might add a little bit more. If I'm eating lunch on my own, I'll get some reading time in. But there's always that pocket of 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I always have a book with me, my Kindle with me. You know, if I'm standing in line, I actually like going shopping. Just takes my mind off things. If I'm waiting in line, guess what? I'll have my Kindle. I'll just open it up. So that adds up. Those minutes add up.
That's awesome. I think it's I don't know if it's Zig Ziglar or whoever, but he's real big on the windshield university or whatever, always listening to something in the car. That's cool. I'll have to implement that. Maybe I'll be able to up my book per month count.
And I would just say, Schaefer, and I mentioned this to a lot of people, don't worry about the quantity. For me, reading is an instinct. It's just something I enjoy. It's a go-to. I don't even recommend people to read. If that's your way of learning, you know, do it. A lot of people just learn by jumping and doing things. But I'm one of those people that reading is an enjoyment. It's not work for me whatsoever. And something tells me you're kind of, you're hardwired the same way. But don't worry about the quantity. It's more about, or I should say, don't worry about the quantity. It's the quality of the reading.
When you go through, and I know you go through a lot of them, but when you go through the process of deciding what book you're going to pick up next or what audiobook you're going to download next, what's your process? What I know you read a lot, so you probably just, you're not quite as selective as many other people, but what's your process?
I ask that question to everybody else that reads a lot. Now, this is obviously a podcast, but we're doing this through Zoom. I'm holding up a book called The Trick by William Leith. And one of my close friends, Brian Jones, who works for the Table Group, owned by Patrick Lencioni, Brian recommended this book. And so when people recommend a book to me, I will usually write it down. Or if it's someone I really know, like, and trust, I may move everything else and definitely read it. So I do base a lot of books on recommendations by close friends. Some of the books you're going to hear about today, you know, Amazon is amazing with the way they come up with the suggested books. You bought this, you might like this. So that happens a lot. I do read the Wall Street Journal. I read The Economist. I read other publications. I'm one of the weirdos, Schaefer, who will read the back of the book, the end notes, and I will make highlights and recommended reading. I'll get ideas from there. So it's a number of ways, but recommendations are big for me.
I know from, you know, being around you kind of in other settings, I know that you're very well read in a lot of different topics, not just business related, but definitely business related. Outside of finance, even what are some of your favorite genres of business books slash just books in general?
That is an easy question for me. I love narrative nonfiction, and so that's going to be usually the people writing narrative nonfiction are journalists. Several years ago, I think his name is Bilton, Bilton. He wrote American Kingpin. That's one of my favorite narrative nonfiction reads. One of my favorite books that I think every CFO should read is Barbarians at the Gate. That was written, I want to say, back in the 1980s. That was the Kravis Kohlberg Roberts leveraged buyout of RGR Nabisco. That is narrative nonfiction. A lot of you guys, younger people, almost everyone that reads has read Bad Blood. So narrative nonfiction, to me, that's like reading fiction, but you're learning at the same time. I love history. I really like history a lot. I like memoirs. I like autobiographies. So that is an important genre for me as well. And I do like classical literature. I like The Crime and Punishment. It's one of my all-time favorite books. I love the book Uncle Tom's Cabin. That may be number one, number two. Great Expectations by Dickens. Love that book. So I do like classical literature when I get time to read it.
I mean, really kind of all across the board there, which is, I did not know. I knew obviously the business stuff, but didn't know about some of those other ones. So
Schaefer, I know you're supposed to be interviewing me, but is it okay if I ask you a quick question? What do you think of this show, CFO Bookshelf?
Yeah, I've been a big fan of it, and it's I've been kind of a student of finance by necessity. And it's been awesome to kind of study under some of your tutelage. And this show has been a avenue for that, which is awesome. There's a lot of really cool pieces to this. I never thought I liked numbers in high school because I hated algebra and I hated calculus and trigonometry and all that stuff. And I was like, I'll hate finance too, but it's so different. And it's such a creative, place that I think a lot of people don't. They just see numbers and they don't realize how creative you can really be.
See, I didn't know that because when I'm around you in a business setting, you ask these great questions. So I just thought numbers were second nature to you. I mean, you're very numerate to me.
Well, I appreciate that because that has definitely not always been the case. I know I upset my mother with some report cards I brought home in intermediate school.
Before we turn it back over to you, can I ask you what some of your favorite episodes have been?
Yeah, a few of my favorite episodes have turned into a couple books that I've read this year that I really, really like. Liz Wiseman, Love the Rookie Smarts book. Love that podcast. And I might be a little bit biased since I'm a younger professional and kind of a rookie myself. So it's always fun to hear some of those stories and kind of how that works. A couple different books on Hunter Harrison. So I haven't read it yet, but I purchased Railroader and Switch Points both, which were a couple of the shows as well. And what a fascinating individual that man is, just flipping railroads left and right. So super cool there, the Hunter Harrison stories. Also, David Farber's book on John Raskob, I'm actually reading right now. And that was a really cool, really cool podcast. And really enjoyed that one as well. Those are probably my top three favorites.
Judy Johnson is one of the co-authors. We're going to mention her book a little later, but her current CEO that she works for, and he listens to the show. I think he's in Philadelphia, if I'm not mistaken. And if I'm wrong, I apologize, either Philadelphia or Pittsburgh. But he's listening to the show, and he's going to hear that, and he's going to appreciate that because, again, we are fans of Judy Johnson, her book, Switch Points. Again, she was the co-author. But anyway, yeah. That's cool that you brought that up.
I haven't dug into hers yet. So I'll tell you if I like it or not, Judy. I really like the podcast. So I'm assuming I'm really going to like it.
Well, it's all of yours, Maestro.
So I know you've read a lot here in this first half. Top five. What have been your favorite top five books here that you've read this year?
The way I'm going to do this, Schaefer, is I'm not going to tell you number five, number four, number three, all the way. I'm just going to say here my favorite five, and I'm going to read them in the order that I read them. So number one, we've already mentioned it, is Railroader. Howard Green is the author. He was one of our guests earlier in the year, I think the first or second week of February. And for those of the people who will be listening a year or two from now, 2021, I do not know where this book came from. I think it popped up in my Amazon suggested books, and I thought, this looks pretty good. I'd never heard of Hunter Harrison. And in my opinion, he's probably one of the top five CEOs of all time. He was not a one-time CEO, not a two-time, I believe a four-time chief executive officer. And every railroad he took over, he took it to the very top, to the pinnacle. One of the railroads he turned around was Canadian National, or CN. Did you know that the Gates Foundation is one of the biggest, either them or Bill Gates personally, is one of the biggest investors in Canadian National? I mean, that's how big. And I would love to hear the conversation that he had with Warren Buffett. What do you think, Warren? Think I did a good job? Of course, he invested in Burlington Northern. But a railroader is special because this is a guy who had no college education, high school kid, kind of had a rough childhood, family situation, maybe not the most stable, or didn't have the greatest relationship with the father. He goes off, has to find a job, ends up working a railroad. He loves it. And he just kept getting promoted. And along the way, he came across a mentor. But I do want to mention also, he's the pioneer of precision railroading. So great book. I think any financial leader, CEO, even people in marketing, HR, name it, are going to value from this book. So first on the list is Railroader. And like I said, you bought it, right?
Yes. Haven't read that one either yet, but that's next on the list. Railroader is, and then Switch Points.
The next one is Full Circle. Now, the full title is Full Circle, A Memoir of Leaning Too Far and the Journey Back. And that's by Erin, and I hope I get her name right, Erin Callan Montella. And Erin is the former CFO for Lehman Brothers before they went down. And Erin, interesting story. Have you ever known people in college, high school, that everything they did, they just went all in? I mean, it was like lights out. I mean, just fully dedicated, single-mindedness. I mean, like Michael Jordan in whatever they did. That was Erin. I mean, she was a gymnast, then she became a tennis player, and then she graduates. Every job she was in, she just put in tons and tons of hours. But guess what suffered as a result? Family life. I mean, not many friends. Her first relationship where got married wasn't really a deep relationship. So that ended. And so the rest of the book is what she did to get out of that state of mind. And I'll just say that it has a happy ending. And Erin, if you are listening, and I have tried to reach out to her on LinkedIn, my only advice for Erin would be, this is a book for men too. It's not just a book for women who are trying to, you know, make career the number one priority and maybe not getting the right priorities in place, you know, family. I don't care. This is not a gender issue. I mean, men have this issue too. We can put work in front of family, in front of family responsibilities. So this is an important book, I think, for all people, male, female, does not matter. So this book was a healthy read. I actually wish I would have read it 30 years ago had that book been available.
Awesome. That off the chip. I mean, former CFO of Lehman Brothers. I'd be interested just to hear what they had to say in general, but it sounds like she really hits home and in kind of a cool space. So excited to snag that one.
The third book is interesting because I happen to know your father. I think he's a tremendous human being. I call him Coach in front of his back and behind his back. Your father, Jeff, is a CEO. He's a results oriented person, and he's a tremendous leader. I just thought Jeff would enjoy this book. And the name of the book, it's How We Play the Game by Ed Stack. Now, have you read the book Shoe Dog?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, anyone who reads has probably read that book. And it's almost like fiction, isn't it? It's like, is this a true story? And Ed Stack's book. And now we were talking in the green room. If he's the founder or co-founder, it's really his dad who started the sporting goods business. And it was Ed who took the business to a whole new level. I think had his dad kept running it, it'd still be one or two stores. So Ed just had this high tolerance to risk, wanted to grow Dick's Sporting Goods to a high amount of stores across the U.S., and he succeeded. I'm not going to call this book Shoe Dog Great. I'm going to call it Shoe Dog Good. But it starts out where he's a young man. He worked for a very demanding father. I mean, his father was hardcore. I mean, work, 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 work. You don't have time to play baseball, sports, stuff. I mean, so it's amazing that Ed stuck with the business because I think he could have just been burned out. But I think he really liked retail and he liked sports and he saw an opportunity. But what makes this book special is, and I'm not going to give it away, there's obstacle after obstacle after obstacle, and they just keep overcoming it. And that's the formula for a great story. You got this flawed hero who's trying to overcome all of these obstacles, and he figures a way out. And there's a time where you think they're going to run out of cash. That happened in Shoe Dog. So there are some similarities, but now I did not read the book. I listened to it, and the listening experience is fantastic. So highly recommend, if you like books by CEOs or about CEOs, it's How We Play the Game. Phenomenal. Excellent. Excellent book. The book number four is probably, if I were to show my cards, I'd probably say The Wisdom of Finance may be very, very close to my favorite. And this is going to be a book that sticks with me. I'm already rereading it, by the way. And by the way, the author of The Wisdom of Finance is going to be on our show here in a few weeks. I haven't got it scheduled, edged in stone yet. But before I talk about it briefly, when you think of finance, Schaefer, what do you think of?
Well, I can tell you what I for sure thought of growing up. I come from an automotive background, family in the car business. And I always remember thinking, you know, people would always give, you know, used car salesmen a bad, that's the greasy sales. Those are the grease balls. And I remember thinking, no, it's not. Finance is where the grease balls are. The Gordon Geckos and the The guy from Wolf of Wall Street,
Jordan Belfort, is that his name?
Yep. And obviously he's glorified a little bit with the DiCaprio movie and everything, but that to me growing up is what finance, the finance world was.
I would say that the author of The Wisdom of Finance brings the humanities. He puts the humanity back into finance. Finance is a good thing. Any endeavor that starts, finance is at the heart. Even if you fund something on your own, even that lemonade stand, someone had to fund that. You know, that's finance. So this is a book based on great literature. The author brings stories of great literature to the table, and you will not find one formula in this book. There are no calculations. You're not going to find that. You're not going to see things like EBITDA. You're not going to see ROA. It's not that. So you're going to come away with some important financial terms, and they're going to be sticky for a long time. If you read this book, it won't be the first time you read it. You'll read it again, and I'm certain the book will stick with you. This book is special, and I hate it that I haven't read it until now, because this book's been out for a few years. So I'm giving this a huge 5 stars.
Yeah, that'll be probably a good read for a lot of people that have kind of some misconceptions of like the finance world in general.
The 5th book is Doris Kearns Goodwin. I think she was the one who wrote the book Team of Rivals. There's been a movie made off of it. Now, when I say a movie made off, not the entire book, but one part of the book, Team of Rivals. But the book I read of hers this spring was Leadership in Turbulent Times. I do not like leadership books. I guess I need to apologize to all the men and women who have written all these thousands and thousands and thousands of books on leadership. I would prefer reading leadership through history and reading some of our heroes from the past. And that's my way of looking at leadership. I also think that leadership is very contextual as well. So what Doris Kearns Goodwin does, which by the way, if you have a subscription to Masterclass, this book is predominant in that class. She is just phenomenal. She's someone you just keep talking. Don't quit. I just love listening to her. But her book features 4 presidents of the United States. We have a global audience, so I want to make sure 4 presidents of the U.S., Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, there's FDR, Johnson, Lyndon B. Johnson. I did not know much about Johnson before that book, and I really did not know a whole lot about FDR. I've read Teddy Roosevelt. I've read a lot of books on him and about him, and I've read a couple of books on Lincoln, but not as much about FDR. And LBJ, an incredible, that guy knew how to govern. But she takes those 4 presidents. There's 3 sections. Each section has 4 chapters, and she'll talk about each president in those 3 different sections. And I loved it. I have a lot of highlights. I still need to go back and write all my notes. On my Twitter account, it's like there was about 3 weeks I was tweeting different parts of the book. And I absolutely love the book. It's almost a feel-good book for me. I didn't want it to end. And when I got done, it's like, dang, I did not want it to come to end. But I still need to go back to my notes and just do a kind of a refresh of everything, because there's a lot to absorb in the book. But again, highly recommend it, especially for those of you all who love leadership books.
Well, Mark, that's like a little less than 10% of what you've read this year. That couldn't have been easy picking those specifically. But what were some of the other ones you read? Do you have some honorable mention picks?
Yeah, I knew you might ask that question. So I'm going to run through these fast. I hope we're not going too slow here, but I've got Switch Points, and that's a book that's co-written by Judy Johnson. Her team was one of the consulting firms that worked for Hunter Harrison when he was at Canadian National. And he hated consultants, but they needed help with the behavioral issues. They had some culture issues. And so her firm came in and helped with some of the culture issues. And she was able to provide some simple tools just to get people more dedicated, more engaged with the business. And these are tools that worked. So I love the book. I'm a big fan. By the way, you're in the automotive business, and Jeff Morrill, an incredible human being. He wrote the book, short book, Profit Wise, is a CEO. He's a co-founder of Planet Subaru, based in the U.S. And I think they are the biggest Subaru dealer in the United States. And so he wrote a book called Profit Wise. And I love that little book. And he is also on the show. So I read the book first and I begged him to be on. Actually, I don't think I begged him, but he said, sure. And just a great, great guy. Read Many Unhappy Returns a few weeks ago. That's by Charles Rosati. In fact, I like that book so much, I invited him on the show. But he was a founder of a business, a professional services firm, IT firm, I believe, publicly traded, eventually became the chairman of the board. And someone at the time during the Clinton administration tapped him on the shoulder and said, we need you to come run the IRS. And that was a time where they wanted someone from a business background to run the IRS. And at first he said no, then he said yes, but a phenomenal story. I still don't see how he turned around the IRS in those 5 short years. Now, someone might say, did he truly turn it around? Let's just say he did some great things during that 5 years he was there. Another book, I had Bryce Hoffman on. You know I'm a big Alan Mulally fan. He wrote the book, American Icon. Read that book 3 or 4 times. Love that book. Bryce said, I would love to come on, but can we talk about red teaming? What's red teaming? I had no idea he'd written a second book. Huh. And so I read it. I thought, holy cow, this is a cool little book. So it has tons of frameworks in it, lots of mental models. 2 of my favorites were the Premortems and the Kinevin framework, but it had, again, all these frameworks. And I love that little book. And it's one of those books where you almost need to go back and reread again. I would say any chief operating officer, that should be must reading, but it's called Red Teaming, again, by the same guy who brought us American Icon. You have an awesome sense of humor, and I'm trying not to laugh here, but the next title is Heist. The oddball crew behind the $17 million Loomis Fargo theft. That book, I thought, was maybe fiction. It's not. It was a true story. It was turned into a movie, and they converted it into a comedy, although it's based on a true story. But that book was, that came out of nowhere, and that ended up being a fun read. Again, it felt like fiction, but it's a true story. 3 idiots decide to rob a bank. And it ends up being that one of the guys who was involved in the robbery, he left town, went beyond the U.S. borders. He never got any of his money. And then one of the people involved wanted to knock him off so they wouldn't have to give them any of their share to him. And he ended up going to jail, got out, and he's actually living a good life. He owes like several $1 million. Because of restitution, but he's out, and it's just a hilarious story. The other book I read was a painful read, The Wizard of Lies. That's been turned into a movie on HBO. Diana Heinriques, I believe, is the author, but that's a book about Bernie Madoff. And I've already read one book by Markopoulos, who is one of the whistleblowers that the SEC said, That's not true. But I think the author of The Wizard of Lies, she was a journalist at the time. She's also the first person to do an interview with Madoff once he was incarcerated. But again, it was painful to read. It's like this, I just felt sickened as I was listening to, or actually I read the book, and I just thought, this is painful. I mean, people lost money, and it's like he had no remorse. And I can't relate to that. And then the other book that's an honorable mention is, I think the author's name is Fearon, F-E-A-R-O-N, but he wrote the book Dead Companies Walking. And I do love investment books. And instead of going long on businesses, he goes short. So there's a lot of different stories about him shorting businesses, and that's how he's made a living by he has a small fund that he manages, a small hedge fund, and it's basically shorting companies and debt companies. Walking out is like, man, that was a fun read. And I hope we can get him on. We've reached out to him, but so far no go yet. But that was a book that was just fun. I have a lot of highlights in that book.
Well, Mark, it sounds like even within some of those, you have books that you reread or plan to reread. How do you decide if, like, when you're reading one, you're like, I'm gonna keep this one and I'm gonna read it a year later? And why do you do that?
I do have a handful of books that I do reread every single year. I'm a huge fan of the podcast, The Two Bobs. There are two marketing people, Blair Enns and David C. Baker. I love that show. It comes out every 2 weeks. Blair wrote the book Win Without Pitching. And for those of us in the consulting industry, everyone in consulting should read that book. I even think if you work in sales, you should read that book. Marketers should read that book. So that's a book that I switch off, I either listen to it annually or read it. And what's really interesting is I got a book coming out this year, and the person who read the narrator, she's also going to be doing my book. And I believe her name is Shannon Lee. So I'm really looking forward to that. So that's kind of a sidebar, but it's usually books that I've already read once, and I just say I would like to read that again down the road. There are a couple of Drucker books that I love rereading. The Effective Executive is a book that I read every year, and I'll soon be rereading it soon. Pure Genius is not a book. It's a CD series. That's by Dan Sullivan. All of my kids have gone through that even more than once. I think everyone should go through that. I did interview Chuck Coonrod this year. He wrote The Game of Work, came out in the 70s. That was a fun read. That was almost like brain candy, rereading it. So if I'm going to interview somebody, I will reread the book, even if I've read it in the past. I interviewed David Farber, who wrote the book Everybody Ought to Be Rich, the story about John Jacob Raskob. And I'm glad I reread it. It's like, this was a great, great book. And I was not intending to reread it because I'd taken so many notes the first time. And that was just, oh, I love that book. And I got as much out of the second time as I did the first. And well, I'll mention one other book. I listened to it because he has agreed to be interviewed. I'm just trying to figure out when we can schedule it. But Matthew Berry, does that name ring a bell?
It does not.
Now, I'm coming out of the closet. It's one of those conversations you have with your mom and dad. Mom, dad, I need to tell you, it's true. I play fantasy football. And so Matthew Berry he's on ESPN. He basically put fantasy football media on the planet. I mean, he is the go-to guy. He has what's called the love-hate column every week on ESPN. He has a great podcast. He has a TV show. And I loved his book. It's called Fantasy Life. I just, you know, in that book, you laugh, you'll cry, you'll go through every single emotion. And he does have a writing background. So I did re-listen to it, thinking that, hey, he's agreed to be on. So I had to go through it again. But that was one of my rereads, or I should say re-listen. But those are some of my rereads that I got through in the first half. And by the way, don't tell anybody about the fantasy football thing. I'm trying to keep that private.
And no, I remember you jonesing out about Clyde Edwards-Helaire every time.
Next question, dude. Next question.
Okay, so I know you mentioned earlier you've dived into some of the classics and you have a broad palette, if you will, for reading some of these books. How often do you read, and what do you read in terms of fiction?
Not enough. I wish I read more fiction. Speaking of national championship in football, one of our kids is a decathlon champion. Now it's NAIA, but my wife and I were headed down to Gulf Shores a few years ago, and we will like to listen to a book together when we're driving. That's like a 10-hour or so trip from central Missouri. So we listened to a Lisa Wingate book, and I just remember her name is a great book. And she had a title that just popped up in one of my Kindle suggestions or Amazon suggestions in email. And her book is called The Story Keeper. We've gone through some turbulent times. We were talking about civil rights earlier, but I think this would be a good story for anybody to read who are teens, young people. Again, the name of the book is The Story Keeper by Lisa Wingate. I love that. That was a great read. So I got through that earlier this year. And we mentioned a book earlier, The Wisdom of Finance. That author mentioned the book, Oh Pioneers, which is a book probably 70, 80 years old, maybe may have even been written in the 1800s. That was a great book, fiction, Oh Pioneers. And that will be a book that I will definitely reread. In fact, I may even reread it. It's just phenomenal. And it's, you could put a finance story around it. It's, I don't think the author is thinking of dollars and cents, but there are a lot of financial analogies in that book, Oh Pioneers. I wish I could read more. I have several works of fiction that are in one of my upstairs bookcases near the fireplace. Just don't know when I'll be able to get to them.
I'm glad you threw that bit in there because I've had, I think it's important to dabble in that a little bit. I know we talked prior to this about, you know, a couple friends that have kind of gotten burnt out on reading. And it's probably because it's kind of a one-dimensional setting where it's all nonfiction and it's all, and it, I'm sure it kind of wears on you after a while. It's nice to mix it up and kind of get some other stuff in there.
So before we wrap up, I've got to ask you, what are some of your favorite books? Am I allowed to do that since I'm being asked the questions?
So I'll tell you a few of my favorites, and then I do want you to know this because I think you'll think it's funny. I'm currently in a Mark Gandy sponsored or inspired by Mark Gandy book club.
That's cool.
It's me and one other fan of yours, Brad Wright, who might be listening to this one, but it's not much of a book club because it's just the two of us, and we meet at a dive bar every week in Kansas City. But that's where we're currently reading the John Raskob book.
That is music to my ear. That is very cool, Shaver.
Well, I'm glad that you like that because it's our whole lineup for the rest of this year is all basically Mark Gandy suggestions. So
my only worry about that is I hope you're getting some breath in your reading.
We don't move quite as fast as you do. So we get quite a few breathers in. So we're mixing it up a little bit.
That book on Raskob is amazing. And if I can go on a quick rant before we wrap up,
yeah,
I can't stand some of these pundits who say, you know, the CFO today needs to think like this or think like that or do this or do that. It's like, no, do what you're good at, go in that direction. Obviously, it needs to be in alignment with the leadership. No one told Raskob, by the way, he started out as a bookkeeper. Did you know that? He started out as a bookkeeper, very humble bookkeeper. But he loved deals. He's buying these little railroads from municipalities. And it wasn't Pierre DuPont who said, you need to go do it. No, Raskob did that. It was Raskob's idea to help Pierre DuPont to buy out some of the family members to where they could start growing. It was, I don't know how far you are. Have you gotten into the part where he introduces them to GM, General Motors?
Yep.
That wasn't Pierre DuPont's. In fact, Raskob invested first individually into GM to make sure this would be a good idea. So no one's telling him you need to act like this. And by the way, he was not a management accountant. So he hired a guy named, I think it was Donaldson Brown, to be the number one accounting guy for General Motors. And so Raskob did what he was good at. And he didn't have someone saying you got to do this. He knew what he was good at. He knew what he was not good at, and that's what makes that story special.
That is cool. And you talking about him kind of wheeling and dealing a little bit. One of my favorite stories was when he didn't think Pierre did a good enough job negotiating a deal. So DuPont leaves town, and behind his back, he goes and axes the deal and finds a better one somewhere else. And Pierre came back. I was just like, man, what? What are you doing? Why would you do that? Don't ever do that again. It's like, sorry. I was glad you're getting a raise.
Now, Deep, I was going to say, don't you think Pierre kind of said, yes?
Yeah, which is just awesome. He got scolded, but walked out of there with a significant raise. So pretty cool story. Great book. That's one I'm excited about. The book Obstacle is the Way, I think, might be my
Ryan Halliday.
Yep. I've read that one a couple times and read it again this year. That's definitely my, that was a President Menace recommendation from Benedictine College.
By the way, just a shout out to Ryan Halliday. If you are not on his e-newsletter list, you need to go find his website. It may be ryanholiday.com, but if you like Ryan Halliday, don't forget, he has a phenomenal e-newsletter. I don't know if it comes out weekly or bi-weekly, but you talk about a guy who reads. His reading list is better than mine. I'll just say that. But I love his newsletter. It's remarkable. Well, we need to wrap this up, but it's so hard for me to want to wrap this up. So who do we have next week, Schaefer?
Next week on the CFO bookshelf, we've got Jane Thier of CFO Dive.
And what's she going to do, Schaefer?
I have no idea.
You have no idea. If you're going to be hired to do this full time, well, no, Jane was on back in December where we talked about the top shows. She talked about the top stories of 2020. So I have invited her back and she's excited to be on. We're going to talk about the top stories. The first half is already over here in 2021. So again, that's going to be our theme next week with Jane. And she's a remarkable young journalist. It sounds like when I talk to her, you're talking to someone who's been writing for 15, 20 years. And I love hearing her talk. She just speaks with clarity and confidence, but she's going to be on next week. And again, I want to just say thank you to Schaefer Schutz. You did outstanding.
Thank you for having me. It was a ton of fun being able to jump in and do something a little different and be involved.
And we will talk soon. And maybe can we have you back sometime to guest host again?
Count me in.
CFOs, VPs of finance, controllers, staff accountants, financial analysts, FP&A professionals, and all other financial leaders. Thank you for listening to CFO Bookshelf.